This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
I am currently in Santa Barbara, Karen. I'm in a law office.
I feel it.
You can see behind me, there's a law book.
I can see it. Yes.
Yeah.
Chris is in such a vague room. It could be a conference room. It could be just a place where they put just those 15 files.
I mean, on purpose propped up a law book so you knew exactly what kind of a conference room it is. I've just gotten into law, Karen.
It's a law conference room.
Yeah, there's a slip and fall. I got to deliberate. This lady fell on some ice into a lawnmower. It wasn't on, but
cleaner up.
It hurt her pride. Yeah, I hurt her pride. So we're going to see what we can do. No, I'm just,
right.
It's my friend's place and they have great internet.
It's beautiful.
And I'm happy to be here. And I'm
go ahead. For it. No, launch into it. I feel it happening.
We have a guest waiting in the wings, and it always feels awkward to just let them sit there.
Terrible. Although there is a bit of a power element to it that
I like holding it entirely. Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
It does feel good right now to hold this. But I'm going to let it go, and we're going to introduce our... Do you want to do it together? I know you think I do have a fear of mispronouncing names.
You know his name.
Yeah, Salman Giorgio. But when it comes up to the actual... And I know you're not supposed to say the name early like I just
before,
did.
No, you're not at all.
I just wanted to prove that I do know the name. But when we announce it, I will probably
figure
say
out a way.
Deborah DiGiovanni again. Just because there's a couple letters in there and she was just on.
You're right.
But I'm as excited for our guest today as I was for Deborah. Does that sound weird? Okay.
A little bit.
How do we know our friend, Karen?
Seems unfair. Clubs and colleges all over the country.
So many colleges.
So he loves to do colleges. He likes to do nooners. Just any old, like a local junior community. He does all those.
And
he's the king of all of those.
Yeah. Midday in a cafeteria. But in all seriousness, he has an amazing late night set. And we'll talk about that. I loved it very much. Everyone, put your hands together for Salman Giorgio.
Yeah.
Aw, thank you.
Now, am I right to go Giorgio?
Giorgio is the correct pronunciation of my last name.
Because there's a lot of people, Giorgio would be an incorrect pronunciation of your first name, though.
Yes, you can definitely, I'll accept it. It's
Giorgio, Giorgio.
Giorgio, Giorgio.
Actually, that was my brother's, because his name was very hard to pronounce. People gave the rest of my family got nicknames with just names that are easy to say.
Yeah.
And he got George Giorgio, and it was just...
Oh, wow. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Then he started his own line of jeans. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
My awkward intro to you, there's specifically what late night set did you do that really kind of blew up and kind of changed your career?
Conan.
It was Conan.
Okay.
It was Conan. Mm-hmm. It went very well. It went really well. It's literally the reason why I eat food. right now.
Yeah, because it turned into a career for you. It's hard to ask.
I have a question.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is something I think of for all. We have lots of friends who are very funny, but it's a different thing when you go to do your first. Was it your first late night set, that Conan set?
That was my very first. And it was, I had to poop every 3 minutes.
Yep.
Until
that's what I want to hear about. As you walk to that curtain,
there was nothing coming out of my body but blood up until that point.
Oh wow!
It went into a medical issue, but before you went to the hospital, quick set.
Went on stage, got off stage. I felt like I never needed to take a shit ever again.
Isn't that funny?
Surely, honestly, if you're having any constipation issues, get a late night set.
Yeah.
But you weren't. I mean, for what. When did your nervousness leave you, would you say? Because you did not seem nervous at all to me during that set.
Oh, I was nervous that whole time. But really? I think I'm just high functioning under chaotic situations. Mm-hmm.
You seemed cool as a cucumber to me.
The more fearful and terrified I am, the more collected and reserved I come off. Which doesn't help if you're in danger and me having to convey that to other people.
That's right. If you ever need people to help you in any way, mm-hmm. it's not a good skill to have. But if you ever need to do high pressure comedy sets in front of a very discerning crowd of, I think it's roughly 300. That's the skill to have.
Yeah, it's very handy. Yeah. House on fire. You don't want it. But
public speaking nailed it.
No.
Fine.
Yeah, it's nervous. You were nervous because it was your first time, but also the set you had planned was pretty personal and you knew you were going out on a limb. And how did you feel about that? Did you feel like
some people call me a risk taker and I appreciate it.
That's what I'm accusing you of being.
I don't know. For me, usually my jokes are my jokes. I don't really think of them as that risque. I feel like I've surrounded myself with enough comics that I'm like, these people have fucking massive balls bigger than mine all across the board. So like every once in a while, like that's the one I really don't know if I can claim is the am I taking a big risk? Because I'm like I'm taking a risk, but not.
Yeah, you weren't doing it on purpose.
I'm not walking into uncharted territory.
Yeah. I just remember before I walked through that curtain, I was wearing this cardigan sweater. And at the last minute, I was like, I want to take this sweater off. It's too much. And the guy whose job was like a grip and he was just there to open the curtain. He's like, you keep that beautiful sweater on. And it gave me confidence. And Karen was like texting me and it's like, saying reassuring things and get it. That really helped. Like I went, but once you're out there, it's hard not to, until you hear a laugh, it's scary.
Yeah. And my big question was when I did Dakota and said, what does he say to you afterwards?
Yeah.
And all he did was like, what part of LA do you live in? Is all he had.
Oh, did you like sit
and
down?
Did you say none of your business?
Yeah.
Stay away from my home and family.
Why are you asking for my address right now?
What are you gonna drive by my house? Get away.
Like, but I think for me, I didn't realize how short of a walk it is from your green room to behind the curtain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's like the second you get behind the curtain, you're gonna start within 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's like, I'm like, oh my God, you should always have to be ready. But like I knew how long it was going to take. I just, for some weird reason, I was like, I think I have 9 more hours left.
Yeah. And when you were done, I can't remember. Did you go sit by him or did he just walk over to you?
I did not sit by him. He came to me.
Yeah, I don't think they do that wave over.
That's the true power move.
Yeah. Didn't it used to mean something where it's like, if they wave you over all of a sudden, yeah. You didn't know, but you're doing a panel situation.
I don't know. I've never been invited to the seat, so.
I think that's like, I'm thinking of
hurtful.
Old Carson era. Yeah, I think
I'm just
thinking of Carson.
Look, I've been told, I've been informed that people get invited to the chair. I've never been allowed.
Can I just add this, that oftentimes the decision of whether or not people get asked to the chair is how long that show has timed out to the second, because it has to be delivered at, say, 48 minutes and 35 seconds exactly. So he either does the throw from the desk alone,
yeah,
or if they have to eat up time, they'll literally do a thing of like, and what part of Los Angeles are you from? Yeah, and ask you a second tier question like that.
That's so funny, because in the history of comics, they've all thought it meant, this was a decision he made because I've made that step in my career.
I think it did for Carson, like in 1981. And I don't, I think that ended long ago.
Yeah. I think before they went out, they said, if he likes you, he might wave you over. If he doesn't, scurry off behind the curtain.
If he pulls out a contract, sign it. It doesn't matter what it says.
If he hits you, say thank you. He's quick to anger.
Look, I'm just saying it's an opportune time to renegotiate your fee if they ask you to do something extra, like sit down on the couch.
That's right.
That's right.
You're like, yeah. You know what? I saw my contract. I didn't ask for this.
Do you have $75?
Yeah.
Then fine, I'll do it.
Sitting down technically sounds like a stunt. So I'm going to need a stunt rate added.
But you know what? Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say anything.
I'm not either. I'm interrupting you not to say anything. Well, I was just going to chime in on that idea of the nerves that I have gotten backstage waiting to be walked. Mm-hmm. Like, there is this period of time that I feel like it's the most vulnerable I'll ever be, which is when they come to get you out of your room and walk you down the hall, and that time in between where you're just kind of like, just a jellyfish,
yeah,
and it's all fear and it's going to go wrong and you're trying to anticipate like how to not fuck this up, and it's such a, and you always walk through and there'll be somebody kind of random and great in the green room as you're walked through it, but they're like, good luck, and then you're like, now I hate you, Ron Howard, or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's all these weird, I don't know, the times that I've done it, it was such a, like, I really want this to go well. I'm old. Like, I don't want this to be sad for anybody. I want this to only be like a victory for myself and the audience.
Yeah.
Like that weird kind of like anything could happen.
Yeah. And I thought at the last minute, I'm like, what if I faint? And then they just kind of zoom in on my lifeless body. I thought that was an option.
Oh, yeah. There's always a part of me that's like, I'm pretty sure everyone's just working against me here. I don't know. They're going to edit this out.
Huge cuts in the middle of your set. It's huge.
Who was the guest that night? Did you interact with them?
I didn't interact with, it was Terry Crews, who left right after he went on. And another, it was a scientist of some sorts that I couldn't remember at the moment. And then Adam Sandler filmed a segment for a future episode. So he was there to film his segment. So I actually, he came by and said, and he complimented my set.
What did he say?
He told me he loved it and he thought it was amazing. I was just so flustered that he even came by. So
screamed, get out of my yeah, room.
Get out of here.
Don't you have your own green room, Billy Madison?
Like, don't you touch my melons. I swear to God.
He's a sweet person. He's always been nice when I've seen him just at
so,
things.
Good. That's such a cool compliment.
Yeah.
And so like such the perfect person where it's like, oh, kind of the face of comedy said I did good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's just like this, like the last person you kind of expect to be there. That's your one of your idols. You're just like, oh, OK, this
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
But you're here. And now I feel good about everything I've ever done. And my you might as well have just sound just like my dad and say I'm proud of you. And then
the night I did it was Ice Cube and Wayne Gretzky, and Ice Cube was much more approachable and friendly than Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, wow.
I love Ice Cube.
Yeah.
I love him. Did you talk to him?
No, I just said hi. And then I think I said have fun. And he was like, you too. I said have fun. I don't know. I want him to have fun.
He deserves to have fun.
Like in his movie, Are We Having Fun Yet? Yeah. One and two.
I thought it was Are We There Yet?
Yes, but also the script says ... to have fun.
Are we there to have fun?
Yet.
One of my best celebrity dreams, and I'm sorry, this is definitely boring, but I'm going to say it anyway. One of my best celebrity dreams, I woke up and I had, you know, like if you look at a Patagonia catalog every once in a while, they'll show you people who are like camping on the side of a cliff, like literally their tent is shoved into the side of like half dome or whatever.
Yeah, being held up by a rope and a carabiner.
Yeah, it makes no sense in terms of like some, that you'd sleep there.
Yeah.
Maybe rest there, but sleeping. So I had a dream. I was in one of those like basically weird hammock tents on the side of a thing. And I was like, no, I'm not going to be able to get down. I'm too scared to go up or down. Like, how the hell did I get here? And here comes Ice Cube in a helicopter.
From
Ice Cube rescued me off the side of this camping cliff in a helicopter. Like, girl, get in this helicopter. I was like, oh my God.
Had you just watched Triple X? He's in the third Triple X. As an extreme.
I can't remember why he was so front of mind for me, but man, it was a great. Oh. It was one of those things where I'm like, oh, I didn't realize I'm in love with him.
This yeah.
I have two celebrity dreams that show up in my dream, and they both turn into werewolves every time. And it's Tina Fey and Harriet Winslow. And that is, it started off with Harriet Winslow first, and then Tina Fey got introduced to the werewolf family later on in life.
Wait, it's a whole family? You have reoccurring werewolf dreams?
I have reoccurring dreams. I have my night terrors are I jump into lucid dreaming the second I go to sleep sometimes. So I have way too many dreams. That's years of dreaming, lifetimes of dreaming.
And you remember them, like they stick with,
Because I actively try to get out of them because I literally am in that, in dream sleep the second I like close my eyes. And then it's like, and then I've learned a bunch of tricks. Like I trip over stuff because I actively.
To get you out?
Mm-hmm, that because makes my leg jerk in real life and it wakes me up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So in your dream, you conjure a trip situation so you can get up. You trick yourself.
Yeah, because the thing with lucid dreaming sometimes, because people are like, oh, it's great, I'm in control of my dream, but also your subconscious is hanging out, throwing out whatever random thought it wants. It'd be like, oh, I'm having a sex dream. And it's like, but what if it's your dad? I'm like, why did you have to say that?
Where's a table leg I can trip over? Get me out of here.
That's so
Wait, can I ask, I'm sorry to ask this, who Harriet Winslow is? Do I know?
I didn't know either. I just was quiet.
Oh, Harriet Winslow from Family Matters? The mom.
Oh, yes. Now I do know exactly who you're talking about.
I thought you meant...
Now I want to know which Harriet you think I'm talking about.
I immediately... Harriet Winslow sounded like the lead singer of a really cool band. Oh,
yeah, yeah, the lead singer of the Sundays.
Yes.
That's Harriet Wheeler.
Harriet. Yeah,
that's very close. Yeah.
Harriet Winslow turning into a werewolf.
That is amazing.
A perfect.
But she would always be playing the role of my mother. Also, if there's a role of my mother, she plays my mother in my dreams every time.
That's good star casting.
Do you ever have those dreams where you're not in them and no one you know is in them? They're literally actors whose faces you've conjured and you're just watching a boring movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually, mine are pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
I had this whole alien colony dream once, and it's like 50 years of it.
Yeah.
My brain is wild by its left its own.
I never remember them, but sometimes I do have good dreams and I feel like there's good ideas in there. And for the longest time, I was trying to write them down. I had a pad of paper and a pencil right by my bed so I could immediately write them down. But I would always forget right when I went to write. I never remember dreams until quarantine started. And now I'm having vivid dreams that I remember, and I'm not sure why that is. I'm sleeping better.
You're traumatized is what's going on.
I'm horrified, and it's been great for my memory.
Good news, you're traumatized.
I'm so scared.
Processing huge feelings at all times.
Once upon a time, you didn't have enough cares to want to remember a dream, but now...
Right. I want them to replace reality.
Yes.
Yeah. My buddy Jim Jim Hamilton has an app that I think he got it because he wanted to find out if he was snoring or had sleep apnea and didn't know until this recording of his sleep that he full on yells and has full conversations.
Oh, wow.
And it's his birthday. That's why I was here in Santa Barbara. And I slept in the next room. He got a suite with like a door. And he is having full. I woke up to him just trying to barter with someone in a marketplace or something. Like he's having a full. Have you ever talked or sleptwalked, either of you?
No, I'm pretty. And like the thing is that's why I trip myself, because if I move in my sleep, yeah. I have to be actively awake to move. That's why my arms gets really like I get dead arms so often, because I have to wake myself up to churn. So yeah, I'm like a burger. I have to flip myself. Yeah, and I have to be awake to do it.
And you're out the whole time. Mm-hmm. I definitely talk in my sleep, and I've always had reports of saying weird stuff or like doing a lot of like giggling to myself. I think it's very sinister.
That would scare me.
Several complaints about that where I'm like
giggling. Yeah, that's horrifying.
I know.
I giggled at my brothers at night when we would share a room. I would do like a really terrifying baby giggle, just like across the room, and it's like oh, it's hot, and it was
okay. Show of hands, bedwetters. Just kidding. I'm oh no, Karen, if that was a legitimate, I didn't mean to take away from you finally talking about this.
Up until it was like slumber party, the beginnings of slumber parties. And then my mom, we talked about this. My mom did this amazing trick where she handed me, it was a glass that only had like a quarter of an inch of cranberry juice in it.
Oh,
and
right.
It was right before I was supposed to go to bed. And she goes, drink this and you won't wet the bed.
Oh.
It's a new trick we're trying. And I was like, really? And then I did it and I didn't wet the bed. And she completely mind fucked me into not doing it. Because I was so nervous about my friend's birthday party. I'm like, I'm going to wet my sleeping bag and all these girls are going to make fun of me.
It's
almost like a form of hypnosis. That's brilliant.
Yes.
That is amazing. I've done the opposite that Salman does in his dream, where I'm like, I've had vivid, oh my God, I can't stop peeing dream where I'm just letting it go. And when I wake up, I'm like, well, for sure, that was my first bedwetter. And no, dry as a potato chip.
I've not, both my younger brothers were bedwetters until a bad age, until I could say like 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And one of them, when he got to the point, like, cause he was afraid of the hallway. So he was getting up to go to pee, but instead he would, cause he was too afraid, he would just pee under my bed. So like I would like, I remember one Sunday I just went to grab my church shoes from under my bed and just this wall of old urine smell just overpowered me.
It's as far as he could make it.
I
go any further.
One time my friend got up in the middle of the night and he was snoring and walking, which is that's true sleepwalking, and there was a pile of his clothes. They were clean, but he hadn't folded them. And he started peeing on his clothes. And I was like, what are you doing? And he kind of woke up. He's like, I'm in the bathroom. And I'm like, and I just said, oh, yeah, you are. Continue. And I just watched him pee on his own clothes. I gave him permission. And he was very upset with me. But it's not like it was my idea.
Tell him to stop drinking so much.
It was that is. Yeah, we were very drunk.
Jägermeister.
Yeah.
Jägermeister. Oh, man.
I've told this story millions of times, but it's one of my favorites because it was the year that I flunked out of college and I had to move back to my parents' house. And immediately my mom's like, the countdown begins and you're kicked out in a year. So get your shit together. It's like, I've never felt so unwelcome in my life. And then one night, me and my sister and some people that we went to high school with who also had already graduated, went out to the woods in somewhere in like Healdsburg. And then it was a kegger out in the middle of the woods, which is super fun.
Yeah.
But then the guys that were seniors when I was a freshman. So at this point, they're probably 21 because I'm like 19, I guess, or they're old. 23. They're like, Karen, come here. And they have a bottle of Jägermeister. And they're like, this is this new stuff. So this is like, 1990. And they're like, you won't believe this shit. And we just start passing around this bottle of Jägermeister. And I took it as such a compliment that like I was a girl that would get picked to get pulled into the Jägermeister sub party. Except for, then cut to I'm so shit faced. Things are just coming in like memory Polaroids because I was so drunk. I go home And I wet the bed, wake up in the middle of the night. I'm like, oh my God. And I have to go downstairs and sleep on the couch. And so then at like 7:30 in the morning, my mom comes downstairs and I hear her like shuffle into the kitchen, and I open one eye from the couch and she's standing in the kitchen staring at me, and she goes, "You wet the bed." And then she just turned around and went back upstairs. You wet the bed.
To let you know, in case there was another reason you were sleeping on the couch. It's
just like, if you don't feel enough like a loser being here at your parents' house at age 20, guess what else just happened that you might not realize? Look,
luckily for me, I've been so consistently dehydrated that there...
it just doesn't come out.
That my body clings to whatever liquid I allow it to have.
I feel like I've brought this up on this podcast as well, but what is the movie where the kid becomes a runner because he's running home to take down the sheets that he...
Michael Landon. It's Michael Landon's life story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's his real life, the actor Michael Landon story.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
He was a pa on Little House on the Prairie. Yes. This is very before your time and very of my time. And Michael Landon was like Aaron Spelling, what's the current, the Darren Star, the whatever, Ryan Murphy of the late 70s. And so like Little House on the Prairie was the hugest show and he was the executive producer. And so then they made his life story, and a huge part of his childhood was he had an abusive mother who would hang his pee sheets out the window so all the kids could see them, thinking that would get him to stop wetting the bed.
It's the cruelest.
And so he would run home from school, and he was the fastest runner in his school because he had to beat everyone to his house to pull the sheets
out. It's so funny. I just made up that it was a show about Prefontaine or something. It was about a runner.
It's very much like that.
Yeah.
I would become if I wasn't the fastest runner, I would be the fastest runner.
That right. is...
And that is the most abusive mom thing to do, is hang your pee sheets to embarrass you. Like, that's going to teach you.
Like, that works. Like, wouldn't no one wet the bed if that was a solution?
Yeah. No. We all know, just a thimble of cranberry juice.
Little... And really intense eye contact.
Yeah. No blinking.
Yeah.
But you know what? If she didn't do that, would we have Highway to Heaven? So I don't know.
Right.
Right.
Always a lesson. I'm so glad you brought up that show. I've been watching it. It's on. It's still good. That's the first time I remember looking over and seeing my dad cry. His mouth would be open. Because that's how he tried not to cry. He'd just open his mouth and keep his eyes wide. Because there was kids with cancer and their hair was falling out. It was a heavy show. There was a lot going on. And Victor French, they were such a sweet friendship. Mm-hmm. And we were not a religious family at all. And that was as close as my dad also got to spiritual, is wanting to watch Highway to Heaven every week. Yeah.
It was very Christian. It was very Christian.
It was, but they called him the boss, and they'd be like, "Oh, you," like it was a fun relationship with God.
Yeah. The lighter side of God.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
Redescribe it as.
Now, were they both angels? I'm trying to remember if they were both angels.
Victor French was just a guy that I think in the pilot episode, which I've watched recently, so I should have it memorized. He was in a bar fight.
You really should.
And Michael Landon was just passing through, like the highwayman that he was, and he broke up the fight and got Victor French to stop drinking, and then said, "Hey, why don't you be my best friend and travel across the country with me?" I think initially the plan was to take him to the edge of town or to a rehab clinic, but they became
a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah, they became. They had a bunk bed together, they just drove. They never slept. They just drove in that silver Eldorado or whatever.
That's
it
perfect.
Was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did see the origin story. I never knew that. Yeah. Victor French was a hitchhiker. And then in real life, they died within months of each other.
Did they?
Is that true?
Yeah. Victor French died after Michael Landon, I think.
Because Michael Landon died of complications of HIV?
I think it was cancer.
It was
his hair. They cut his hair. All of his power came from his hair, and he had this long, lustrous hair.
You're thinking of Tangled. That's a different TV show.
Oh, yes. Solomon. Tangled Rapunzel.
Yes,
that's correct.
Who we speak of. Yes.
Similar,
my other steady view. Yeah.
Yeah. They if you cut your hair, you lose your power and your will to live.
Yeah. But they were like good friends, and they were in, I mean, Victor French was in, I think, Highway to Heaven too, or Bonanza. Like they were in many.
They were both on. Yeah, they were both in Little House on the Prairie together.
Yep. And then for them to die within months or weeks of each other, it's like a couple dog, like when a dog dies and the other dog or people, it really made me sad.
I would actually expect that of all of my friends.
Yeah, that's such a nice way to say you're my best friend.
Yeah, the least you can do is die.
Also die. Yeah, I died.
The most you selfish thing you could do is keep on living.
Yeah, really, honestly. Yeah. After your best friend dies.
Yeah. Way to let them know from above where they're hanging out with the boss that you never cared.
Not at all.
You're just eating a sandwich the next day?
Salman, would you say, is there a TV show like Chris's had Highway to Heaven to get help him get through the pandemic? Is there a certain TV show or thing you like entertainment, piece of entertainment that you return to time and again for your sanity?
Family Matters, maybe.
Well, Family Matters is a show that I will always love because it's a show that jumped the shark within the first two episodes.
And they sold out immediately.
If you just like the, whenever the show jumps a shark is when a show becomes generally fun. Like it becomes anything happens and there's no reason for anything. And I think I have fun watching those shows. Most people don't. But those people have no taste.
What was the shark jumping in Family Matters that they...
That's the introduction of Steve Urkel.
Oh, right.
The show was supposed to be about the Winslow family from the viewpoint of Harriet Winslow, because she was actually... It was a spinoff of Perfect Strangers. Her character was on Perfect Strangers.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. Yeah.
And Steve Urkel tested so well, and then it became about this kid. And it was like the first, because that's, then it became, there was a robot Urkel, there was a Myrtle Urkel, it was all insanity after that.
I didn't watch it a lot, but I do remember the episode where he became smooth and cool.
Stefan
and
Urkel.
He was like, he became like this handsome, cool kid. Yes. And I loved it.
It's Stefan Urkel, but also his aunt was played by Donna Summers, Aunt Luna from Altoona. who spoke very quietly and whispered until it was time for her to sing in her Donna Summers voice, and that was the best. I just finished rewatching Cheers and yes. Taxi, and I'm now back into Designing Women. So I'm watching sitcom. I love sitcoms.
Shows are just solid joke after solid joke. I need to revisit Designing Women. That's anything Annie Potts. I mean,
it's
get out
so
of here.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Julia Sugarbaker has probably the best monologues ever written.
Yes.
Sugarbaker. I forgot that was her name. It's the best.
Her The Lights Go Down. That's the night the lights went down in Georgia speech. It's the second episode, too. It's one of the greatest pieces of writing in sitcom history. It's so good.
It's true. She would always like it, you know, whenever it was like, I guess it would be the bottom of act two usually or whatever. Right before the resolve, Julia would step forward. She was like the original social justice warrior. She would step forward and just be like, I would like to point out right now, and you know, the lesson we're all learning right here, and then put it in very fine, put a fine point on it.
It was Shakespearean. It's like that point where they do the two, is it the sonata or chorus? Yeah. It's masterful.
Yeah.
There's like, we're just going to let this Southern woman be cutting as fuck for the next 3 minutes with no pause for even a breath.
I got to start. I loved it when I was a kid, but I haven't even thought about Designing Women for years.
It's the cast is so amazing. Jean Smart, Annie Potts, Delta Burke. It's just like, they're all stunning.
Yeah. Like Jean Smart's the best. She's funny. Oh.
She's so legendary. I loved watching her just get part after part after part when that show ended.
And her parts were never the same. It was so, like, I think it's, she doesn't get enough, like, her role in the Brady Bunch movie as the promiscuous neighbor that's trying to get a piece of Mike Brady. It's really...
Oh, that's so good. I think I haven't watched Taxi in a while, but I think that might be my one of my number one childhood shows. The from the opening theme to that vibe where I was like, this is what it's like to live in New York.
Yeah,
you know, like
a
taxi cab garage and with mechanics. I just loved the whole, you know, it was just very like scenes from a Italian restaurant, Billy Joel type of vibe where you're just like, adults working out their problems.
Totally. That's how I got from Hill Street Blues. I don't even remember. Yeah. The cop show. It just, that was the grittiest part of my life is just watching that show over my dad's shoulder. I don't think I was allowed because there was gunplay.
They make good TV. You know what else is good? Sorry. I just saw a trailer for this because I just started following the Twitter feed, the Silver Age of television. And so they keep tweeting old promos for old shows. And there was a promo for Cagney and Lacey that was so ridiculous. But that is an amazing show to dive back into.
Yeah,
Cagney and Lacey and the Streets of San Francisco.
I remember
Carl Malden.
That's Michael Douglas, right?
Yeah, Michael Douglas and Carl Malden.
Yeah, Michael Douglas and that. I think that was a crush, me remembering a crush now, because Michael Douglas in that was hot as hell.
Hot as hell. And I think he was the EP or something.
Yeah. I don't even remember. I have no memory of that.
It's like 19, late 70s, early 80s.
Mid to late 70s, I would say. Because there was, from my memory, definitely could be wrong, but there are so many long car chases that almost are like real-time car chases where suddenly you're like out in the car and they're going over this hill, then the second car comes.
Signaling.
And it's like they take their time. It's a full hour.
They do like a full pause in the middle of a scene. I don't know if it's like the way they cut into the commercial felt so abrupt.
Yep.
And then they pop, like you show up where it's paused and then they hit play again. You're like, okay, are we watching it from are you holding the remote for me? Yes,
from inside the scene.
Yeah, what is going on?
It's so good.
There's something comfortable about watching these old shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're familiar from your childhood, but also it's fun to find out what was good or well written. Because other stuff you revisit it and it's like, oh my God, this is the worst.
Yes.
It's just,
well, also you realize how like insanely talented people are in sitcoms. Like the cast of all these sitcoms, you're like, these are people that are just that went and launched, like, for example, like Taxi is like, oh, three, four, five, the greatest comedians of all time. All happen to be in one show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta start watching Taxi. I've never really watched it.
Rhea Perlman appears in it as Danny DeVito's character's girlfriend, and the acting, those two, I don't know why they've not done enough stuff together, because the way they play off of each other is some of the best stuff.
Maybe they weren't a couple yet, and there was some anticipation, you know, some Ross and Rachel shit going on.
Right? Backstage.
Yeah.
I when you see them together, it's the funniest thing where it's just like, it's almost like, I bet they both were like, I guess we have to be a couple. No matter what the chemistry is or anything, they're just like, we have to.
Even a few years ago, they tried to break up, remember?
And they cheated on her.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that part.
Well, they're separated now. I don't think they're together anymore, but they're still very good friends.
Yeah, they have to be. They have to be. If you're the exact same height as
someone. Have you been following this? You've been tracking this relationship?
Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman are just a thing that I want to be. Just, I want to know what's going on with them at all times.
Yeah.
Solomon, have you ever watched WKRP in Cincinnati?
Of course. Yes.
Okay. I love that show. If you're in for the sitcom of that era, that one is a great one.
Also, aesthetically, everyone looks amazing in that show. Like, it is the most visually pleasing 70s show. like it's so I want every outfit from every gender in my closet from that show.
Entirely. It's so true.
There was a guy named Les Nessman on that.
Yes.
That's all I remember.
We'll be right back with more music and less Nessman.
Oh, that's
amazing
great.
Lines on that show.
Yeah, and like, I don't think I ever watched Cagney and Lacey, but I remember in the beginning there was a clip where Cagney goes to Lacey, "You got to go out there, you got to tell them the truth." That's all I remember. And I think that was enough as a kid. I was like, I don't know if this is for me.
Too intense.
Yeah, I got to go back.
It's, you know, Tyne Daly, just as we would all guess, but she's acts her ass off in that show, and it's really delightful.
Yeah, she is great.
I was trying, I also watched Alice, a little bit of Alice recently, and that one is a fun, like, I'm just on my way to Hollywood, but I decided to stop in this town instead and become a waitress. And that is, like, they just needed the flimsiest idea.
Yes.
And then they made a whole 10 seasons of a show with it.
Is that that Kiss My Grits?
Yep.
Okay.
And Kiss My Grits, so it was like, Alice was a single mother and a divorcee who wanted to be an actress, but now she's going to be a waitress. Then there was Vera. She was nervous. Then there was Flo. Yes. She was a smart mouth. And then there was Mel, and he was a slob.
And
it was real simple.
Was the spinoff One Day at a Time, or what, with Snyder, are those unrelated?
I think it's Neil, the legendary.
Norman Lear?
Thank you, Norman Lear. Norman right?
Is Alice Norman Lear? I know One Day at a Time is Norman Lear. I'm not too sure if Alice is. I can't remember.
Wow.
I mean, Stephen, would you help us out? I think it is.
I'm on
that's,
it.
But I'm guessing. You got it. But it's because maybe it's because all this, they all use the same font.
Yeah.
That gold, like capital looking font. It was era of TV.
Yeah, with the curly Q.
Alice was created by Robert Gitchell.
Oh. No Norman Lear as an executive producer?
I don't see him anywhere on here.
Okay. Yeah, they would say so. They would tell you right off the bat.
Turns out I don't remember my childhood. That's what that means.
I think I thought Norman Lear made every show on television.
He did for a solid decade.
Yes, it's true.
And I would watch everyone. I think that's probably should be the next library I break back into, is the Norman Lear library, because it's the best one.
What do you want to do other than watch TV once this is all? Are you vaccinated and ready to get out there?
I am vaccinated. I was part of the clinical trial.
Oh, congratulations. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, I sacrificed my body for science.
Of course you did. Selflessly.
Well, it wasn't that selfless. I had selfish reasons.
Has it been a couple of weeks? Like, could you?
No, I got the shots back in October of last year. Shot in October, because I was in the actual trial.
Oh, wow.
And was unblinded, because it's a blind study, so I didn't know if I was a placebo or not I'd say 2 months ago. I kind of knew based on my reaction.
Sure.
But
that would be a disappointing reveal. It's like, no, we just put a little poison in there so you get sick. That was definitely sugar water otherwise.
Sugar water and a little Clorox.
Yeah,
thank you for participating.
Yeah. So thank you for... but no, the thing is that when they unblind you, they do give you the vaccine if they give you the placebo.
Unblinding. What a curious phrase. I mean, so I get it, but...
But you were right. You were right in guessing that you got
it. Yeah, I was right. I wouldn't have reacted like... But the thing is that people can react to placebos, but I could tell it was a genuine body reaction. I'm vaccinated with the Moderna vaccine.
Nice.
And it's like showing up to a party 6 months before your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's at the house.
Let's do this thing.
Be sure and try the dip. Oh, is it gone? Sorry.
Is it rotten?
Are you ready to go? Are you starting to think about booking work and getting back to doing real stand-up? Or are you?
I guess.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I go back and forth.
I got to sit down for a year and realize life is long.
It's true though. Stand up will always be there for us. It's not like age out of it.
Yeah, especially when now, like, I'm now at the end of my 30s, and now I'm at the place mentally where I'm like, oh, it's not. It does, like, these goals are kind of pointless. You just have to keep on living. So
yeah,
just work on the stuff you want to work on. And if you get a thing, you get a thing. If you don't get a thing, you don't get a thing. And then you go on to the next day.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then maybe then you get a thing. There's always a thing.
There's always a fucking thing. And that's
it's true.
It's really the issue. It's you keep living and there's always going to be a fucking thing.
Then you kind of spread it out a little bit and you're like, I could get this thing over here. I could get one of these things too.
Exactly.
I'm good at that as well. And then you kind of like, then you have a nice repertoire and then you get more things because you can do more things.
A multifaceted, multi-talented, multitasking.
Multi-hyphenate.
Solomon
Jordan.
The third.
I think in the early days, my mind used to pronounce your name Solomon Gregorio. Sure I said that in front of Guy Branum one time. And then I say Branum.
Yeah.
And then he was like, who are you talking about? I think that's how I remember it. But
I feel like I think my name is easy pronounced, but then I see that it throws some people off sometimes, and I'm fine with that. I'm also of the school of if you get close, I'm happy.
I just knew a guy named Mario. It's not any to correct you if you said Mario, which I don't think he does anymore, but it was Mario DiGiorgio. And so for a long time, I put a D. I called you DiGiorgio. And so if you ever heard me do that, know that it came from a place of a friend that I love. And I was just confusing you for this other friend I love.
I love how you apologize for the possibility that I might have heard you do a thing that I did not catch you do.
Until now, and I tell you I did it. Yeah,
and he already said he doesn't care.
Yeah,
like, here you are.
I'm gonna keep digging it. I'm so sorry. I called you Solomon DiGiorgio. It doesn't even roll off the tongue. And had you heard me, you would have been offended. Again,
I assure you, I would not have. I am.
You gave me a look. I knew it was acknowledged. I knew I blew it. It was 3 years ago. We were at Tenants of the Trees.
If you would remember my opening set, if you remember my credits, I'm the toughest skin in comedy. That's what I make right. People say every time.
Yet
you changed from clubs and colleges. I didn't know.
The thickest skin in comedy.
Thickest stand in comedy. That's right. You know him.
Yet somehow the most blemish free.
Mm-hmm.
What
feel
a nice
free to heckle.
Great skin. You can't hear it on the podcast, but Solomon has great skin.
They can feel it.
Your voice. What's a place that you have fantasized about going back to? Once everyone does have the vaccine, like in a group setting.
In a group setting, Akbar.
Yes.
Akbar is my favorite bar. It's my favorite place to be drunk and make unwise decisions.
Yes.
And it was also a place where me and my friend, who's no longer here, Richard Bain, went to all the time.
Yeah.
And I haven't been since his passing, so I want to just go and get it over with. Say goodbye to that monster and then go on about my day.
I mean, it's been closed. It's probably still closed. It's been closed this whole
time. It is. There's been a fundraiser to keep it open. But it's just the right amount of dive bar. But it still plays, has the best jukebox, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it really has a good jukebox, yeah. And I like doing stand-up in that side room with the archways. Yep. And
that's the best.
Akbar is great.
That room.
It's a nice, it's like a bar that can get busy, but still has the low-keyness of a dive bar that you can appreciate. And that's why I love it. And I want to go back so badly. And I'm afraid that every other bar is going to open that I don't want to go to.
Yeah.
Except for the one you want to go to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go there too. I live in that area now. Mm-hmm. I spent so many years in Venice, but now I'm right near Akbar. Well,
I always wanted to go there for one of their dance nights because I've only been there for the comedy and then the like after hang. But like,
Karen,
that back room.
I'll take you to a dance night.
Yes, let's do it.
I'm surprised, Karen. I'm very surprised to hear you want to go to a dance night at Akbar.
Look, I'm not saying I'm not shy or that I don't have body horror, but at the same time, I like to have a good time.
And
that room is perfectly dark and mysterious.
And they have a fog machine most of the time. They have a fog machine just smoking up the room. And it's that 1990s level of fog machine where you can barely see in front of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it might be toxic. It has that taste.
Oh, that was my favorite part of the late 90s, early 2000s is the aggressive use of fog machines. The clubs now don't effectively use it up to the standard that I was used to, which is small space, no windows, bursting to my face.
Fill it.
I did
fill it up.
The first and maybe last time I headlined the improv, they had a fog machine on hand, or I brought one, and it's just whenever a joke didn't go well, it had a foot pedal, and it would just make this sound, and the fog would just go in my face, and I just kind of acted like it was annoying, but It was fun for me. I love a good fog machine.
Oh, it's unnecessary, but it's so fun. I've never really been in a place mentally where I'm in a space thinking, you know what this needs? Mystery and the inability to see.
And or breathe.
Or breathe.
Yes.
But yet I don't walk away from one when it's available to me. So But yeah, I think, but yeah, that's like, it's such a perfect remnant of the 90s and 2000s. And I kind of, and that's why I love going to Akbar, because it's perfectly 1999 to 2003 in there at all times.
It really will be a fun thing to just dance in a room. Something I'm hesitant to do, but I know that I like watching dancing. Like when Biden won and the bottom of my street on Sunset just became a dance party. And I just stood in a doorway stoop, kind of scared someone would breathe on me or whatever. But I watched people dance with a creepy smile for like an hour and a half. It was like the most joyful, just because you haven't even seen people be next to each other. Mm-hmm. But dance, I miss it too. I want to dance. I want to be near dancing.
I don't even have to dance. I just want, I want to hear the top 40 jams of the early aughts. Bumping
Rihanna,
nearby.
Rihanna,
more Rihanna, then a Britney song, then a Rihanna again.
with fog, and maybe there's indoor smoking that you're not supposed to be doing, but there's so much fog from the fog machine, it doesn't matter.
Oh, wow.
And like almost like people dancing like it's a job, like they just gotta do it.
I love that when somebody walks away from the dance floor and their song that they like plays and they just obligated to churn around like, I was going to stop dancing.
But now Umbrella's on and I'll never hear it again.
This will be the last time.
Yeah, that will be a specific thing to enjoy and watching that moment.
I want to do karaoke again. I want to do...
Yes.
It's a disgusting, gross habit that I...
I'm with you.
Should never have participated in to begin with. It was terrible when I first did it in the 90s, but I still love it with my whole heart. I just love karaoke. I'm not a singer at all, but if I can...
That's the beauty.
If I can I make other too. People endure it.
I've watched enough TikTok karaoke that it's like, I'm constantly reminded that I did actually like it. It's a guilty pleasure of mine as well. They had it at the Holloway and I was going there a lot and I had my songs and I'd go listen in the bathroom and I didn't know anyone there. That's when you know you're kind of getting serious, when you go alone to work on your to work on your song. And I go
your
listen
number?
To it in the bathroom and practice singing in the bathroom and be like, okay, I got it. I know how it starts and then get
what
out.
What song?
There. Oh, what was the last... I was getting good at...
Keep them separated.
I'm sorry, but I've been looking for the right words to say. That song,
The Promise.
The Promise, and you know I wasn't just trying just then. That was my podcast singing. You have a joke singing, and when Karen's really singing, it's like, holy shit, you're a professional singer. There's that same revelation with me. I can kick it up a notch, and when there's an audience, it's like, oh my God, is that Chris... Fairbanks, or is that the band that sang The Promise, whatever they're called?
I personally have no vocal range, but if I drop into Caribbean accent, the world is my oyster. And that's why I always sing Jump the Line by Harry Belafonte. That's my go-to.
That's great. I think
that's like an automatic party.
Oh, yeah.
Harry Belafonte music and that kind of like, what was the song? My dad used to always play Mama Look at Boo Boo.
Mama,
do you know that song?
I do not know that song.
Their mama tell them, shut up their mouth. That is their daddy. Oh, no. My daddy can't be ugly, so shut your mouth. Go away. You never heard that song?
No.
Oh, it's the best.
I need to hear.
It is a real party. Like, you can practically hear the, like, the... I want to say the limbo. What's the other one where everybody grabs each other's hips?
Oh, the
conga line. Yeah. It's like a conga line vibe of like everybody's like singing and having fun.
Yeah, thank God.
I think I hated before quarantine. Sorry, I just wanted to make this point. I hated karaoke because I don't drink anymore. But now that it's over, I don't care. And I know how much other people love it. And the joy of the vulnerability of just doing it and not giving a shit is the fun part.
I want to see that vulnerability. And same with dancing, too. I want to watch people dance that are self-conscious about dancing and maybe aren't good at it. And I want to see them go for it. And
I want to see them leave it on the floor.
Yeah.
You want to see them get it going.
It's just two places where you can see the expectation is that you shouldn't have to be good. If somebody's doing a professional dance routine in the middle of a dance floor, What nerve? What?
Yeah. Or karaoke.
I go to Barney's.
How dare you?
I go to Barney's Beanery. A friend of mine hosted karaoke there years ago, and it was American Idol contestants, mm-hmm. like
yes,
that were professionally good at singing, showcasing, dorks. Hoping someone would come in, and yeah, it was
hopeless
way
dorks.
More annoying than someone's voice cracking at a bowling alley. Yeah,
well,
who cares?
Like you can have a great voice, but if you have the confidence of somebody with a great voice, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, gross. Yeah, yeah.
Gross. No. Don't you know what that looks like from out here? Yeah. No one wants it.
Totally.
We're not at Bocelli's.
And I do it right. When I know I'm doing well at a song, I'm still looking at my shoes like in an aw shucks way. I don't act confident.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoops, I just sing that?
Like, yeah. It's you have to get the bar behind you by not going like, I also work at Universal Studios. Like,
yeah.
There's no fun in mm-hmm. the girl that was always the lead in every musical in her high school singing, because that girl's never stopped singing her whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no vulnerability to it. She's truly going like, no one will pay attention to me. I do this on the bus, please. But then there's the other people who are like, oh, I had to do 5 shots, but now I'm going to do this song.
Yeah.
And then they're just giving it their all.
Yeah.
And it's a real passion moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be strangers for me, though. I don't understand where it's a room of your close friends and you sing to your friend that or your family. It's like, weird to me. I strangers only.
Doctor. Private room karaoke is what you're that.
Ooh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not like I will participate, but my joy is subjugating people I've never seen before.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And that's what I want to do with stand up.
Yeah.
Strange
comedy
only.
To singing, like I definitely, because well, with stand up, I am not as forgiving to myself as I am with karaoke. So that's why I love karaoke.
Oh, sure.
Karaoke,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, you didn't hit the note? Fine.
Yeah.
You didn't nail that song? Who cares?
Yeah. Who cares?
So, and that's why I love having it, because it's a juxtaposition to my mentality when I do stand up, which is like, that joke didn't work. You should go kill yourself in front of your family.
Which is how we all feel. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, there's that moment where, and I haven't done it enough to really have experienced this moment, but I've watched other people experience this moment where it's a regular, like there was a bar in that was near the Gap we used to work at when I lived in San Francisco. It was called The Mint in San Francisco.
Oh, I've been on the Mint.
Upper Market, right? And it's right by the Mint, the actual Mint. And it has an amazing karaoke night. I don't know if you went there.
Oh, yes.
And I watched a woman sing Dream On by Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And she blew the fucking doors off the Mint. It was, and no one saw it coming because she kind of, you know, she didn't look like she wasn't a preenie type. She kind of looked like a plumber. You know what I mean? She was just kind of like, whatever. And she didn't have like his fancy outfit on or anything like that. That song started and everyone in the room was like, ooh, like what? And the complete like, chatty bar turned entirely toward her. Yeah. And by the end of that song, people were like screaming. It was one of the best things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, looking like a plumber is it worked for Bruce Springsteen. You know, you just
walk in.
It's like, I'm here to
play
it
low key.
Yeah. White t-shirt, sleeves rolled up.
The basics.
I would totally watch a documentary about karaoke KJs, karaoke jockeys. I would like, because they essentially their job is to man the night, deal with people, but most importantly, be the best singer in the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Come in and out and make people feel bad for what they just did by doing it way better.
And it's sort of like there's also the power they have where like, you're a good singer. You get to cut in line.
And you have to tip them and they mm-hmm. wink and stuff. And you should take offense if they decide to sing after you, because that's them trying to cleanse the palate.
Yes.
Because you just stunk it up.
You should feel good if they go up there and join you on the chorus, because they think they've deemed you worthy of their backup vocals.
That means you're killing it and they're trying to suck up some of the glory you're getting.
It's a little awkward when that song isn't a duet, but yes, I can let them come
fine.
Up.
And honestly, I have so many friends that end up that were KJs, and comedy has a lot of people that end up being KJs, and I just I would happily just the day in the life of a karaoke.
Yes, and kind of like really good stories from the the karaoke floor of like people that have lost their minds.
Just to do some studies in this documentary that you just decided you're going to make, you should start a karaoke night at Akbar.
Oh,
unless
I
they
ooh.
I would not be a good karaoke host. I would not. KJ is not in my nature.
What if you were the underwriter? So you just make it happen and all the people there. And then someone else does it.
I will make a karaoke night happen so me and my friends can all harass strangers in an unwanted space.
That would be kind of a fun thing to have stand up. And then if you stick around, you get to see these comics do karaoke. I know there's a bunch of shows that it's comics singing or whatever, but if the karaoke was just for the fun for the comics to have, that I would love to do a show like that.
I would do that as well. I would do it, but I wouldn't do the comedy part up front. I would just do all karaoke.
Yeah.
What if we just do karaoke all night? How about that?
I want to tell jokes during the measure breaks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just pick some Queen or like something that like breaks up like that, that has big long instrumentals. Oh, God, and you can do bits during it.
There's so many songs that have minute long intros that you can just let out a couple of quick one liners into and then just go right into the song.
Uh-huh. Or like the Layla, that big old breakdown in the middle of Layla, the song changes entirely. That's when you go into a solid six.
I love the I love comedy. Okay. There's a better word for it, but I can't wait for it to be
also like Love Bazaar is a 12-minute song. So get the whole late night routine in there. Just
remix of Personal Jesus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna practice my half hour set with Iron Butterfly. 38 minutes long.
Any plan that you make once everyone has their second shot, I'm going to be there for it, Solomon.
I would
love to be at any event.
Yeah. I will definitely. I'm very excited for everyone to get their second shot. That's truly my goal.
I'm going to have a party. Karen has promised to have multiple parties, which
I'm going to have one party a night, every night of the week.
I want to be in a house with friends. That's what I'm looking forward to the most. And we've talked about it a bunch on here, Karen and I, that in the past we had anxiety about going to parties or we just didn't show up. And not anymore. I'm going. I'll be there. Yes. Even if I don't want to. Even if I have a sprained ankle.
I'm going to be the person now that has a baggie of drugs at the party. Hey, what's up? Look at this. I found this in the bathroom. Just insane.
Behavior. I'm going to become a briefcase with whippets in it guy.
Yes.
Oh, God. You guys are just talking about my friends now.
There was a party that we went to, and I think it was at when Cornell lived with all the boys from Power Violence. Remember, Chris, you and I went to that party and we got stoned with Howard Kramer. And then we all split up and I ended up talking to somebody. I was in such a full on pot panic and I started talking to somebody and it was a comic. I can't remember his name. He started telling me about the intramural soccer league that he belonged to, and I was so afraid that I was about to leave the planet. Like I was really in a full-on, I should not have smoked that much pot at a party. And so I was like, really? And I kept asking him really detailed questions about his soccer game that was happening the next day. It was as if I was fucking fascinated by this person, but it was purely just so I wouldn't my head wouldn't explode.
Yeah,
and
it was an exercise
away.
And really trying to feel normal. And all of a sudden, he thought you wanted to be on the team. Yes, I'll show up.
Yes, I am.
If it sounds normal to say that right now, yes, I'll be on your team.
Yes, then I am.
The amount of times people have come up to me and said, Solomon, there's this one time you told me something really poignant and profound. And I just have to stand there and go, I was rolling my titties off. On Molly, and you were the nearest person to me. I am. And that is just the way it is. And I don't remember saying that, but here we are.
Isn't that the fun of a party? Yes. Saying stuff to people.
Oh, I've shown such interest in things that the next day I'm just like, what? Like, I felt like I was just staring out into nothing, but there was a whole person there that I was talking to specifically about a thing they're going through, and I don't recall it at all.
Yeah. Which is like your own fault if you're going to talk about stuff like that at a party. It's mm-hmm. like, well, guess what? You can't, you might actually get advice that'll help you. But for the most part, there's people who are not in their bodies mm-hmm. anymore. So yeah. I don't know why you'd be bringing yeah. that shit up.
I'm just like, I just want people out there to understand that if I'm sweet to you one night, please assume that I'm high out of my mind and I will be a bitch to you the next day.
I knew it.
I am not coming back to that place of love with you.
I had a night in question with you, and now I know the truth.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Forget it.
Unfortunately, I've cut back. So now I'm in a genuinely sweet place.
We've all been so affected by this.
I've been trying to be a sober baby over on these parts.
Yeah.
Oh, how's it going?
Yeah,
in quarantine?
In quarantine, right? Yeah. I tried it a little bit. I broke off for a bit because of Richard's death, and now I'm back on it again. And I'm not hard on myself because it's difficult. But I think the most difficult part of it is that I quit smoking, and quitting smoking, whew, man, that is just, that's hard. Yeah. That's not fun.
Yeah, I've done it. Do you feel better? Look better? Do you feel like you're healthier? And like,
looking better is hard to measure on me because I'm amazing looking.
Yeah, you already were. Yeah, it was a dumb question.
Too gorgeous that was, to be able to
really.
I ask dumb questions all the time, Salman. That was one of them.
But I definitely, feeling better is very true. It's just, it's really hard. Like, I'm usually a very calm person, so whenever I have the little moments of like sort of mania from not smoking, it's like I'm trying to learn how to process through those.
Try the gum. Have you had the gum?
I'm on the Chantix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been on that text.
Yeah, they were like, Solomon, just be wary. It might give you crazy dreams. And I'm like, Mama, I got night terrors. I want the material. Come on in.
It gave me a sore throat.
New ideas.
Yeah. It made my throat sore, that gum. It's powerful.
Yeah, I never did the gum. Because I feel like the gums and the patches, I've tried them in the before, and it doesn't stick because it's not something that, it's something I have to do the whole time. And it's like, it's just like, I can just grab the cigarette. And that makes the most sense.
Much easier. Yeah.
But Chantix, it's like I don't want to advertise without sponsorship, but but it's really, the cravings are so minimal, and I'm not like, I would have, like before I would have chewed my arm off, and now I'm like, okay, we're fine.
And that's the one that Ray Liotta threatens us with in his commercial.
Yes, even though he's never smoked, I believe.
Yeah.
That's honestly.
Oh, really? He hasn't? He wasn't?
I don't think he was a smoker. I think that sort of was the thing. I don't remember what it is. I just feel like, but I love that. I love anyone selling a product that they don't really need to use.
They don't need it
all. Yeah, like Rob Lowe and his Atkins shake. It's like at one point, were you not just a zero body fat hot dude? It's like, where
you never once had any weight to lose.
Well, I just realized that. Why is he the Atkins spokesperson?
I love that, though.
Greedy. He probably has a lot of taxes he didn't pay.
It's for financial reasons.
Yes.
Okay.
He probably had to get the money. But I love anyone. So like, I feel like people were mad at Cher because she was selling that shampoo in the 90s, even though she wore wigs. I'm like, so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's Cher.
Let her sell the shampoo. You're going to buy the shampoo, aren't you?
Yeah. Do you not believe she's a Pantene girl?
Buy Cher shampoo. No one's using the product on their hair that is in the thing that they're advertising.
No.
Ever once.
Who was just saying this thing and it made me laugh so hard of how I'm gonna say it and not be able to give credit, but it was just basically, we were talking about people that have a ton of things sponsored, or it was on Twitter and I'm misremembering it as a conversation, but it was someone making the point that Jennifer Aniston is just needs moisture so much because everything was it with Joel Kim Booster that everything she advertises for is like water, moisturizer. Yeah. It's like a thousand things, like conditioner and her shampoo or whatever. It's like, she must be so dry.
And she's got great skin. It's extra
the
wet.
The marketing campaign of hydration is so clever. I feel like I have so many things in my house to hydrate me, yet I never feel hydrated. So it's an effective marketing tool because I will be fooled by it every single time.
You got to get a swimming pool. That's the only time
Los Angeles,
you really feel it.
It's impossible to feel correctly moist. Say that.
That's all accepted. Everyone's least favorite word. We heard
scanning.
It. But there's no
scanning.
Other word. There was no
scanning
other word
for a
used.
Better one. I didn't want to also say hydrate. That's what I
was. It was the way you enunciated it too. It was a perfect delivery of moist.
Correct. Correctly moist.
Correctly moist.
I would
get there.
I'm getting that tattooed on my arm. It only shows up when I'm hydrated.
That's how you know you can stop drinking water for the day. It's, oh, there it is.
There it is.
That's yep. It.
Oh shit.
Well, I gotta I gotta get back. I gotta prepare for this litigation here in the office.
Yeah, Chris has to leave the law office. He only rented it for 45 minutes. Yeah, it's also a WeWork station.
It was just for your guys' enjoyment. I wish it had been a bigger hit, but
Solomon, any plugs, any stuff we can look for you upcoming?
Upcoming-wise, I will be leaving my house eventually at some point or another.
So out in the streets?
We'll call it like a fall tour?
Yeah.
Leaving the house? But,
so I live in the greater Los Angeles area. So if you do see me around, just say, hey, Solomon, and that'd be great. I will talk to you. I haven't spoken to anyone very much in the last year.
And when we are all doing stand-up, when you see that Solomon's in your town, I very much encourage you to go see him because he's very... 1,000% stand up. Very
so good at stand up comedy. So good at stand up.
I should probably figure out like dates and stuff and like places.
Hey, me too. I didn't even mean to add that pressure. I don't know either. My guy was like, "Do you want August?" I'm like, "That's a long ways away. Maybe. I don't know. It's impossible to say."
Yeah, one day I'll be out there and I'll be Solomon Giorgio then too, and it'll be everywhere.
You're not going anywhere.
Just you wait and see.
Yeah.
Until then, we'll be dancing it in the Akbar mm-hmm. back room.
I can't wait.
Exactly.
That's the newest tour for all three of us. It's our dancing tour across
see
Silver Lake.
All Akbar at Akbar. Room. You have been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYNAR.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we wanna be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim, give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We wanna send you off in style. We wanna welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.